The next day, Han left the Theron house shortly after breakfast and headed off to catch the shuttle to the nearest large city. He carried with him the backpack containing the items they had stolen from Teruenza. He disembarked from the shuttle in the port city of Tyrena and went to a locked box office where he retrieved a few hundred credits and a set of clean IDs for one Jano Sedanian. Then he went off to a branch of the Imperial Bank and opened an account using the credits and ID. Then he went in search of an antiquities and art store he recalled from past escapades. The proprietor was an old man, still spry despite his stooped body, wrinkled face, and wispy yellow-white hair. Galadon Okanor had looked exactly the same when Han first met him. Now he looked up and smiled at Han.
"Well, it's who today, son?"
Han smiled. "Jano Sedanian, sir." He genuinely liked the little man, who was, at one and the same time, a respected art assessor and appraiser, and a very competent and trustworthy fence. A little later, Han left the store with a satisfied smile and carefully stowed his Jano Sedanian IDs and the bank record into his credit pouch. He'd travel under different IDs and leave Jano Sedanian clean, only using him for the bank withdrawal he'd need to get into the Imperial Academy on Coruscant. When Han walked through the gates of the Theron estate, he noticed a small, very sporty land speeder hovering in the paved courtyard. He approached the door and found a young man standing in the parlor. Pavic Theron and his mother were there, talking to him. When Sarah Theron saw Han, her face fell. Han pretended not to notice. "Hi, Lady Theron. Is Bria around?" The young man turned to regard Han. He was a good-looking fellow, perhaps a year or so older than Han himself. He smiled and held out his hand. "Hello, I'm De Lavar, and you are..." His gaze sharpened, and before Han could speak, he exclaimed, "Wait a minute, I thought you looked familiar. Talus Bryn, right?" Han could think of no curse profound enough. He smiled weakly and shook hands. "Hi, nice to meet you." Pavic Theron frowned. "Talus Bryn? But he's..." Sarah Theron stopped abruptly when her son nudged her, none too gently. De Lavar was oblivious to the byplay as he wrung Han's hand. "What an honor this is. I still remember the day you set that record, and you did it by flying through the tunnel on Tabletop Mesa rather than over it. Is this Bria's new suitor? The swoop racing champion of all Corellia? Your record still stands, Bryn." Bria's entrance was a welcome interruption. Han tried to catch her eye and give her a look-sharp high sign, but all her attention was for the newcomer.
"Dale, what are you doing here?"
"Your mother invited me over. You're looking wonderful, Bria. I'm so glad to see you back safely and with such a distinguished escort. I've wanted to shake this man's hand ever since he won the swoop racing championship last year." She looked at her mother.
"You invited him over, Mother? How nice."
Han didn't miss the edge in her voice. "I get it," Han thought angrily. "Mama here wanted Bria to see me next to her rich guy ex-fiancé, figuring I'd come out looking like some kind of low-life jerk."
Bria continued pleasantly. "Well, Dale, it was lovely of you to drop by. Perhaps we can all get together for lunch someday."
Dale left, and the rest of them just stood there looking at each other. Han had never heard such a profound silence, even inside a spacesuit in vacuum. He glanced quickly from Bria to Pavic to Sarah. All three were staring at him grimly. Han cleared his throat. "Think I'll take a little walk, get some air." Bria felt like screaming, then sobbing, but she struggled to control herself. They had gone into her mother's dressing room. Her mother was sitting in a pink brocade chair, crying, "We must do something." Pavic was waving his arms and raising his voice.
"You heard him last night. He gave us a fake name. Han Solo, right. Who knows what his real name is?"
"Stop it," Bria cried. "Han Solo is his real name."
Pavic kept shouting, "Then why is Talus Bryn listed as the swoop racing champion of Corellia last year? And another thing, my memory is starting to come back on this, and Talus Bryn wasn't Solo's only alias. The time I remembered was about 3 years earlier at a barbecue after a swoop race. That time, Solo was Keel Garrus, the son of Venadar Garrus. Remember him? That guy who went around one summer selling shares in that Duraloy asteroid and the whole thing turned out to be bogus?"
Sarah Theron gasped. "This is terrible. Perhaps we should do something, Bria cried. Okay, I admit that in the past he made some mistakes, but he's different now. He's going to enter the Imperial Academy and become an officer. Can't you give him a chance? He's trying to change his life. Pavik shook his head. That's what he told you, Bria, but guys like that lie for a living. I'm calling security. Pavik's hand was on the comlink when a voice from the doorway stopped him in his tracks. Don't, Pavik. I forbid it. All of them turned to see Ren Theron standing there.
But, Dad, you don't know... Pavik began.
Yes, I do, Theron said. And I'm telling you, Pavik, you're not calling security.
But, Ren...
Sarah Theron began. Her husband turned to her, his glance scathing. Sarah, I'm tired of you trying to use our daughter as a pawn to further your social ambitions. Seizing Bria's hand, her father dragged her over to stand before her mother and thrust Bria's hands out before his wife's eyes. Look, Sarah. See these scars? Those people made Bria a slave. She might have died if not for Han. Han Solo is a decent guy. He reminds me of myself when I was his age. There are some incidents in my past I'm not proud of either. He deserves our thanks, not a call to Corsic.
Han had walked the entire length of the Theron estate and was on his way back when he saw someone coming down the path toward him. It was Bria, and she carried a good-sized bag slung over her shoulder. Han saw her expression and stopped.
What is it?
Come on, she said. We're getting out of here. I don't trust Pavik not to call security behind Daddy's back. She reached over and took his hand. Now it's just the two of us again. Han nodded. That's the way I like it, sweetheart.
Attention all passengers.
At the space station on Coruscant, the passengers were told they'd be shuttled down to the spaceport in small ships. Han was surprised to discover that there was almost no place on the giant world where the natural ground could be seen or touched.
Only in Monument Plaza, their steward told the assembled passengers who traveled on the liner Radiance. There, citizens may touch the top of the only mountain on the planet that still remains. The remainder is all hidden beneath buildings. Coruscant was a warren of buildings, skyscrapers, towers, rooftops, and more buildings, all built one upon the other in a giant labyrinthine hodgepodge. Han raised his hand when the steward asked whether there were any questions.
You say that the topmost roofs are more than a kilometer above the lowest level streets? What's down there?
The Radiance's steward shook his head warningly. The lowest levels never see the sun. They're so far beneath the clean air that they are fetid and damp and have their own weather systems. The alleys are infested with granite slugs, duracrete worms, shadow barnacles, and worst of all, by the degenerate remnants of what once used to be human beings.
Han and Bria made their way over to one of the viewports on the station while they were waiting for a surface shuttle down. Bria whispered admiringly,
"It's like some beautiful golden gem. All those lighted buildings."
Han eyed the planet thoughtfully. Looks like a Coruscant jewel. Must be where the world got its name. They were standing in line, waiting to enter the shuttle, when an official stepped forward and pointed at Han's blaster.
Sorry, sir, you'll have to check your weapon. Guns aren't permitted on Coruscant.
Grudgingly, Han complied with the order, then boarded the shuttle with Bria. As the shuttle kissed the upper edges of the atmosphere, Han leaned close to Bria.
That's a big world. If anything happens and we get separated, I want to set up a meeting place.
She nodded.
Okay, where? The only address I know, because I memorized the location a long time ago, is a bar called the Glow Spider. That's where I'll be contacting Nisi, the specialist.
Han kept his voice very low, but not quite whispering. Whispers drew attention, Han had learned long ago, where low-voiced conversations did not. Bria matched her tone to his.
That's the guy who can get people IDs so perfect that even the Imperials can't detect them? Yeah, he hangs out at the Glow Spider, level 132, Mega Block 17, Block 5, Sublock 12. Memorize that perfectly.
When they reached the rooftop surface of the planet, it took them several turbolift descents to reach the little hostel where Han had reserved a room with their dwindling funds. Bria threw herself down on the bed and stretched with a tired sigh.
When are you going to get our money at the Imperial Bank?
I'll go first thing tomorrow morning, Han said.
But when Han arrived at the Imperial Bank of Coruscant, he was informed by the manager, one Park Eugen Plonk, that Corsec had put a freeze on the funds, which they suspected had been illegally accrued. In Plonk's office, where Han had been summoned to hear the bad news, the manager smiled blandly. "I've signaled for our guard. He should be here any moment. Please, have a seat." Rage filled Han with a strength he didn't know he possessed. Over my dead body. He bound forward and threw himself over the desk, grabbing the bank manager's writing stylus as he did so. Slamming into the astonished Plonk, Han took him over backward in his chair. In a second, he had the sharp point of the stylus positioned just behind Plonk's chubby pink earlobe. "One shove and this slides between your jawbone and your skull, straight into your brain, if you have one. You got a brain, Plonk?"
"Yes."
"Good. Then use it. Now get up and sit back down in your fancy chair." Moving precisely, Plonk did as he'd been told. Han crouched behind Plonk's chair, and now the hand holding the stylus sent the sharp instrument prodding into the man's back. The door lock clicked, and the guard entered. In a second, Han was on his feet, the point of the stylus digging into Plonk's throat. "Tell him!"
"Don't move," Plonk said desperately. "He'll kill me."
"He's right," Han showed a feral grin. "Now you, place your blaster here on Plonk's desk." Slowly, carefully, the guard removed the blaster from his holster, placing it on the black marble. Han reached over and picked it up. "Now, under the desk." Han placed the muzzle of the blaster against Plonk's temple, still hugging the man to him. "Now we're leaving this bank. We're walking out of here, slow and nice. We're heading for the turbolift. When I get there, I'm gonna let you go." They were halfway across the lobby before anyone noticed that something was amiss. A man yelled, another man squawked with fear, and a woman let out a shriek. Han pointed the blaster at the ceiling and pulled the trigger. Flaming debris rained down. "Everybody down!" he shouted. His command was unnecessary. Every citizen was already cowering on the expensive carpet. Han kept a sharp lookout as he and Plonk walked toward the turbolift, so he spotted the squad of Imperial stormtroopers before they saw him. He backed toward the turbolift, dragging the bank manager with him. A glance at its lights reassured him that the lift was on its way up.
"He's getting away," yelled one of the stormtroopers.
Han heard the turbolift doors slide open behind him.
"Open fire,"
yelled the stormtrooper officer.
"No!"
screamed Plonk as the sizzle of blaster bolts filled the air. Han jumped back, smelling burning flesh, dragging Plonk's falling body with him into the turbolift. The high-speed turbolift dropped like a stone. One look at Plonk told Han he was dead. Too bad. He'd have let the man go if those troopers hadn't started trouble. Half an hour later, he was back in their room. He felt overcome by his failure to get his credits to provide a decent place for Bria to stay. She made a brave attempt to pretend she wasn't shocked by the dirt, the smells, and the scuttling insects, but the place was cheap and seemed secure. Han buried his head in his hands. "Oh, baby, this is my fault. I should have realized the huts would run an all-system scan on my retinal patterns and that they'd turn up all my aliases. I thought I'd been smart, but I was dumb as a box of rocks. Oh, Bria, can you forgive me?" She kissed his forehead and said softly, "There's nothing to forgive. If you hadn't done what you did, I'd be in a pleasure house being passed around from one stormtrooper to another. Never forget that, Han. You are a hero. You saved me, and I love you. I love you, too." He looked into her eyes. "And I've been thinking, if we can just get off this blasted world, I know we can manage. We can work. We'll make a life. I know we can." He hesitated, then blurted, "We could even get married, sweetheart, if you want." He could tell she was profoundly moved by his awkward proposal, but she shook her head. "Your dreams, Han. You can't give them up. We've gotten this close. We have to think of something. You're going to be an officer in the Imperial Navy, remember?" It was his turn to shake his head. "Not anymore, Bria. That's over now. I've got to think of what else I'm going to do with my life." Bria began to cry. "Oh, Han, I can't bear to see you so hurt." She laid her head against his chest. Han held her tightly. "We're okay for tonight."
Tomorrow we gotta do some heavy-duty planning. In the early hours before daylight, on this world where night and day meant very little to anyone who wasn't living a wealthy, top-level existence, Bria Theron sat huddled in the grubby, cramped refresher unit. In her hands was a stylus, and before her was a sheet of flimsy and a large stack of credits. Faintly from the bedroom, she could hear Han snoring lightly. He was so exhausted he'd never heard her get up and leave, never awakened when she'd returned hours later. Now, gripping the stylus tightly, Bria wiped away her tears, then forced herself to finish the most difficult letter she would ever write. Han knew something was wrong even before he opened his eyes. There was no sound, none at all. "Bria?" he called. He took a deep breath and told his wildly hammering heart to calm down. Then he noticed that Bria's duffel was gone. There was a note, written on creased and folded flimsy. Han clutched it. It was nearly a full minute before he could force himself to read.
"Dearest Han, you don't deserve for this to happen, and all I can say is, I'm sorry. I love you, but I can't stay."
"She'll come back," was Han's first thought, and "I've lost her forever," was his second. He stared wildly around the room, feeling as if it might explode if he didn't do something. He grabbed a battered chair, swung it over his head, and sent it crashing full tilt into the door. Then he collapsed onto the bed and just lay there for several minutes, head buried in his arms. The pain came and went in waves. Finally, he dragged himself upright and squinted in the dim light to finish reading the words on the flimsy.
"Han, please don't abandon your dream of becoming an officer. Don't be afraid to use the money I left. My father gave it to us freely because he likes you and is grateful to you. Accept his gift, please. We both want you to succeed. I've learned so much from you. How to love, how to be loyal and brave. I've also learned how to find people who will help me change my identity. So don't bother looking for me. I'm going away, and I'm going to beat this addiction. I'm going to overcome this urgent need for the exaltation if it takes my last measure of strength and courage. You've been free all your life, Han. And strong. I envy you for that. I'm going to be free someday, too. And strong. Maybe then we can meet again. Please know that, now and forever. I love you. Yours, Bria."
Suddenly, he couldn't stand being here, seeing this dreadful little room any longer. Stuffing his few belongings into his small bag, Han distributed handfuls of credit vouchers into his inside pockets. Then he put on his ancient jacket and stuffed the blaster into the front of it. He walked out and kept walking. All day and into the late night, he walked, moving like a droid through the unsavory crowds of this area far below ground level. "From now on, it's just me, Han Solo," he thought, stopping and peering up at the night sky, barely visible at the top of an air shaft. One star, or was it a space station, winked against the blackness. Han's mental declaration had the conviction of a sworn oath. "Nobody else. I don't care about anybody else. Nobody gets close from now on. I don't care how pretty she is, how smart or how sweet. No friend, no lover, nobody is worth this kind of pain. From now on, it's just me,